Huzzah! So many hurdles successfully jumped just to get to the beginning of this. Hooray!
Pretty much the name of this entire industry, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's like behind the scenes, everybody. We just fixed a problem
Are
that
we
didn't
cold
make
starting
it on
this?
stage.
This sounds like a cold start.
Well, in that case. Hello, and welcome to the Event Safety Podcast. I'm Danielle Hernandez, and I am joined today by Jacob Work and John Badcock of Rhino and South By, respectively. Both huge friends of ESA. Jacob, as you know, used to produce this pod, y'all. And this time I convinced him to come back, and we're going to have a conversation, friends, about what's going on. We're in the middle of the year, right? It is blazing hot outside. It is July. Let's talk about what's going on. What's happened this year so far? And as we were planning, everybody, we're like, well, let's start with a win. Let's talk about Tomorrowland.
Yes, let's talk about Tomorrowland. What is it, making lemonades, lemonade out of lemons, turning a, coal into a diamond. I don't know what you want to compare it to, but if you want to see a master class of turning things around quickly and putting on a hell of a show, I think Tomorrowland pretty much pulled it.
So, John, just in case the listeners don't know, what happened at Tomorrowland?
At Tomorrowland on the Wednesday afternoon before they opened, their main stage caught fire, and what from the video started as quite a small fire quickly spread to the whole of the stage, leaving only the metal structure of the stage, the metal frame of the PA hang, and that was about it left. And everything else was sort of smouldering dust and rubble.
The
So
videos are astonishing, you guys. If you haven't gone to see them yet, definitely do a quick search and find it out. But we are categorizing this one as a huge win. First of all, no one was hurt. This happened during the build. We don't know what the ignition source is. There's all sorts of chatter. Maybe it was during pyro testing, in which case, that's an excellent case for why you test pyro or anything else, wherever the source was. They were not able to contain it more than the stage, but they were able to contain it from the rest of the site, which was great. And as they said, there were like 1,000 people working on the site. This is a huge festival in Belgium. But again, there were no injuries. One of the things that I thought was amazing was how frequently and transparently they communicated with people. I thought that was a huge win.
Yeah, they put out a number of releases that were, here's where we are. Here's option A. If we get, this done, we will open the whole site. Here is option B. We will open the site in this way, and this will be the outcome. So they were, yeah, as you say, very transparent in how the plans were coming together, and that allowed people to plan as attendees their arrival a bit as well, I would imagine. I think the one of the things I was thinking about it was beyond just the win of obviously there was this huge piece of they lost their main stage, but couple of things beyond that of like they still got the campsites open the next morning. And I think we've probably all been on sites for events where something has happened that is a small distraction and how that can stop all work on the rest of site. But not only was this a huge distraction, that afternoon you're going to have inspections going on, you're going to have all those kind of final checks before doors open the next day. And suddenly all of your everybody working on site is distracted by this thing, quite rightly, to still then take all of those staff and brief them, motivate them, and say, no, we've still got to get the show open the next morning when, some of them will have seen huge amounts of a year's worth of effort just go up in smoke. There's a huge kind of psychological piece around how you motivate your team and keep them all still working safely and in a, coordinated fashion when just over here is this giant fireball, for lack of a better term.
And I think it's helpful too. I might be jumping ahead here a little bit. It's the fact that they did communicate so well with the audience in setting the expectations and being transparent they became partners in the success of this event and making sure that they could actually pull this off, as opposed to kind of saying, we're working on it, everybody stand down, and leaving it like that. Then you get the, you get the curiosity, you get the what's going on, I want to peek over, I'm gonna, kind of go against what I'm being told, because this, I want to,
What are they
watch the
not
train
telling
wreck
me?
over here. They became partners in this whole process, and I can't speak for them, but I think that the end of this event actually was probably a stronger celebration than it would have been otherwise.
Yeah, I saw a lot of very positive social media chatter from attendees who are like giving big shout outs to the crews they could see working behind the stage while performers are performing. And shout out to those crews that worked, above and beyond to get all that up. That is, I hope, because I can't speak for anyone details. Hey, if you worked on Tomorrowland and you want to come on the pod, you have a standing invitation. But that's a good use of the show must go on. They were working diligently to move ahead. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I'll second the call of anyone from Tomorrowland wanting to come on and talk a little bit about the process. I mean, one of the things that has fascinated me about this was I initially thought when they said that they were going to continue and come up with a solution that they would basically roll a mobile stage in, throw it up, and you would have sort of this diminished experience. And due to the power of creative thinking and relationships, they actually brought in a fairly impressive production that they got on loan from Metallica that just happened to be there in the general area and available at the time. I was very pleased to see that, because it kind of had a cool vibe to it. Like I said, the lemonade out of lemons there.
While we're on the subject of relationships and partnerships and so on, the whole piece of with their whatever their AHJs or local authorities or whoever the municipal sort of authorities were there's got to be a really strong relationship there that they are happy to go, yeah, okay, well, we may have seen all the structural calcs for the thing you were going to bring in, but actually we're also going to have to work overtime to review, issue permits, issue licenses, do inspections. And I imagine there is a lot of local authorities or again, whatever their AHJs would look at that and go, we aren't prepared to go along with you building, demolishing. There's a whole demolition piece, demolishing your previous stage using really giant plant equipment and then build a whole new thing. And we're going to sign this off and approve it. If you don't have strong relationships with your authorities there, you're not getting away with that. And the fact that, I'm sure they had to bypass some levels of not inspection of the structure going in, but investigation piece that would have had to been done very quickly in an expedited way. Sorry, not bypass, maybe isn't the right word, but expedite the inspection on the thing that you're removing before you're building the thing you're building. And again, having those relationships is probably another important part.
One of the questions I have, and obviously we're not in this is not a podcast of speculation, but one of the things that I want to dig into a little bit deeper was, obviously you have a structure that has been compromised, and you have to set up a safety perimeter around that structure. And then in front of that structure, you're setting up a whole new structure to actually continue to deliver that show. And what impact that ultimately had on the approved capacities of that area? And were there any sort of other configurations that reconfiguration that took place to accommodate that? I don't have an answer. Obviously, the mainstream media here is not going to provide that, because that's just the deep and nerdy stuff that we
That's
can
the
figure
nerdy
ourselves
stuff that
from.
we're like, oh, let's talk
But
about, how did they plan different egress?
and were I a person who spent a whole lot of time on social media, I'm sure I could find people that were out there talking about it. But it is interesting to me, because that's another component of it. It's not just the structure; it's everything else gets shuffled around because of it.
Yeah, I think that goes back to that relationship because you can certainly imagine if a contentious relationship between these groups where they basically just shut it down. The fact that everybody was willing to come to the table, I don't probably not actually a table,
That
but
works.
to talk it through and figure out the logistics and see what made sense and what they could accomplish with the and everybody had that goal of I have a post-it note on my desk that says work backwards from yes, and it seems like they were working backwards from yes. How do we get to yes? So I thought that was pretty amazing, and the videos were astonishing. So it was just astonishing. Anything else we want to talk about with that?
I mean, I think right now I'd like to revisit this at some point when we can maybe get a little bit more firsthand information on it. But
Sure.
major props to everyone involved in Tomorrowland, and congratulations on pulling off a successful event.
Yep. I think the second weekend is still going on, isn't it? Is this 2 weekends?
It
Yeah,
is.
this weekend we're just
So
hoping.
it's this weekend too.
I'm definitely not the first to point this out. It's been said many times on LinkedIn, but the worry is every promoter is now going to look at everything and say, well, they built that in 2 days. Why do you need 3 weeks on the show?
Let's manage expectations, people.
Yes.
So do we want to move on to a win, or do we want to move on to a concern? Maybe not a concern, just a.
I'd like to go to a concerned one. And this one's weird. And this, again, we're sort of bouncing around in time, but this was just happened recently as well. There were 8 kids in a French choir at a church near Harvard. And a bunch of them had seizures or seizure-like symptoms and were taken to hospitals. And they said it might have been the result of fumes from cleaning supplies, but that seems really strange to me that they were the only ones affected. I have no information on that, but it does make you does remind everyone to make sure that you're managing cleaning products and you're managing airflow. And I don't know. Did you guys have any thoughts about that one?
Yeah, I found this one a little bit odd initially as well, and I also found it odd that there's been I have found nothing in terms of follow-up as to what was going on, which I suppose leads me to believe that the story that was put out there, it does happen to be the case that it just was this very localized exposure. To me, I think it's a reminder that sometimes even the most innocuous things we deal with every day can present hazards based upon the amount of exposure and the audience being exposed. And I can't speak for what cleaning products they may or may not have been using, but we're dealing, the fact that these are all children, meaning that I'm assuming they would all be smaller and more susceptible to certain types of cleaning products. The fumes from things, we don't know if they were all happened to be in one area of the church or they were dispersed. It could be, and the fact that they were all experiencing similar symptoms
Yeah.
also point towards sort of a very specific acute type of exposure. So I think it's a helpful reminder that, obviously we want to be sure everything is kept clean, but we don't spend a lot of time talking about, like Hazcom in
Right.
the world. Maybe in certain circumstances, we do need to check ourselves when we're doing our hazard assessments and kind of going, okay, well, maybe this is going to be a problem and we just don't think it's going to be.
Just trying to think, sorry, this bit can be edited out, but isn't there also the thing that used to happen with sort of marching bands where one would faint and then they'd all faint? And isn't there a psychological term for that's why I was just blanking. I was trying to remember was what that psychological term for where one person experienced something, especially within that age group, there's a famous, am I making things up here? Isn't there a famous thing which
No, I
like
mean it's not really not a contagion effect. That's not necessarily the terminology here, but you're right. There is a sense of influence, and I'm certainly not one to go. I'm not a scientist. I can't speculate on the deeper causes to it, but I am familiar with what you're speaking of. The fact that this happened in New England, part of that weird portion of my brain went, "Oh, is this like a whole new Salem witch trials kind of thing?" Well,
Okay, now we're leaving all this in.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I promise.
I think probably the next little, if we're going from wins and now sliding down to slightly more serious incidents, vehicle ramming into pedestrians and vehicle crashes continue to be a theme. I think we've seen across the summer, starting those in the Liverpool parade.
So I've got a
Become
question about vehicle ramming. It hits the news a lot. But I wonder about a third of the time it is a bad actor A third of the time, it's an angry person who's angry at a situation. And a third of the time, it's a person who's incapacitated for some reason, age,
Medical
medical
emergency, yeah.
emergency, things like that. And I'm wondering if we're seeing more of the stories that are more in that third category, because that we have a jockey lot flea market kind of thing, and they had a vehicle incursion, but it was a medical, but it made a lot of news because right now this makes a lot of news. And I'm wondering,
Do we think it's a bigger problem because we're hearing about it more when?
oh, I absolutely think it's a huge problem because of that, especially that first category. That second category, like, why are those people there? Like, one of the ones that got stuck in the middle of a thing and couldn't get out and got mad.
But it still exposes a vulnerability, even if, again, it's due to a medical emergency,
Right,
incapacitation,
right.
somebody ending up in the wrong place.
In the wrong
It
place.
exposes the fact there is a vulnerability there that the first category of bad actors could continue to exploit, even if the
100%.
circumstances in the other two are far more innocent.
Yeah.
It continues to demonstrate how there is a risk exposure there to crowds and anywhere there's vehicles.
Yeah. And I think it's really, really hard to solve, especially because vehicles are so ubiquitous to places that crowds gather.
And I think, I mean, a lot of that, this will sound odd, but sometimes I think it's easier for people to focus on the why as opposed to the what, because the what and preventing the what, especially in situations such as what we saw in East Hollywood the other week or in Liverpool and whatnot, it's really tough. I mean, especially here in the States. I mean, we are a car culture. You can most places it's difficult to get anywhere without having a vehicle. So, and then, you have you're intermixing qualified drivers and unqualified drivers and
Right. So how many teenagers have run into their own garage?
Right, exactly. I think about the East Hollywood one here because it just happens to be the most recent. I mean, this was a nightclub that was not really in a city center. I'm only moderately familiar with the Los Angeles area, but I was kind of looking around on the Google Maps. I mean, it was a fairly sprawly area. It was next to a gas station. It was a wide road. It was the typical nightclub you see in most parts of this country. And there are hundreds of them in major cities all over.
And they're just on the street. Like,
You
how in
on the
the.
street to closing time, everyone's dumping out. You stop, you're milling around, you're getting the taco, right outside of it, and everything's groovy. How one manages to prevent that everywhere is a tremendously difficult question. In this particular circumstance, yes. Could they, not prevent people queuing inside? Could they send them down the alley? Could they put them in a parking lot? Well, yeah, but that's not the, those are
Right, it's almost solving the wrong problem.
you walk out the door, man. It's a gray space. It's zone X. It's not yours.
Right.
So
In the UK, this speaks to a lot of protect duty stuff and around business vulnerability. I know we could do it, and I'm sure have done whole podcasts on protect duty and so on from a UK perspective. But there is also that thing of okay, so you move your grey space line back. People still have to leave that area at some point.
Right.
So there's always going to be the more, the further you push that line back, it's how and where you draw the line of what point do public just move into a public area.
Right. Yeah. And we're obviously the Event Safety Podcast, so we're talking about events, but think about all the other places this happens outside a school, outside a church, outside a grocery store,
I saw a car getting towed out in front of a little bodega in downtown Seattle yesterday. It had jumped the curb and was sitting right there. I'd never hit the news beyond that, so I'm assuming there were no injuries, anything else, but it's tremendously common. And the only factor here is that it happened in broad daylight and no one was around. But it was right near the convention center too, so could have been Could have been
Right.
worse depending upon time of day and activity.
I think there will continue to be a lot of thought work done on that. It would also be very interesting to see how often vehicles are running into buildings or groups of people. Like, I don't know who does that research, but.
I would imagine, I mean, once again, I leave these things with a list of things that I need to look up at my late night, unable to go to sleep, research here. But, you know, I'm sure the National Highway Transportation Safety Board has some sort of statistics
Right.
tied to this. So.
Yeah, because I'm sure you guys have seen the news story where it was like, Grandma was safe because she was in the back room of her house as the Chevy pickup drove through the front of her living room. You know, just me? Okay.
In the UK, we've got lots of little winding roads. There's always these properties, and you just think, how the hell has that been road ever been like? It's obviously started out as an old lane, but it's like someone's house basically juts out into the road,
Into the road.
and you can see that corner of the house has been rebuilt numerous times as someone's clipped it. So
And it's
it's
like, don't put your chair right this part of the house, but in the other part of the house.
spinning around to the event organizer world. Be sure you are in communication with your public safety authorities who are responsible for traffic management, and you're putting a plan in place that
Absolutely.
accounts for this possibility.
Yes, because I do think that it is becoming more common and more intentional. And I think the middle category is the easiest to solve for. You know, the people that get mad because they get stuck somewhere. By managing your traffic and managing your crowds, you can avoid that one. For me, that's the one that's the easiest. I'm not saying easy, but easiest to solve.
So often the case with that one as well is, even if you've got a road closure, there are people who have driveways, there's parking lots, there's
It's
always going to be
hard.
some vehicle that wasn't a vehicle that was in your closure when you started your closure, but now someone has returned to their car and they were parked in a, you know, down an alley round the back, and they've now driven out and realized there is a crowd there that they weren't expecting to see, and
Yeah.
not there's no hostile intent there, there is confusion.
I want to hear some good news. What? Give me. Let's find another win here to kind of bring up.
Do we want to talk about weather? Because I feel like that's good and bad news in some senses, but there are have been a lot of examples of weather cancellations this
Yes.
summer, which, whilst bad news for the event and for the attendees and for the artists, is a brilliant demonstration that people are, organizers are taking weather very seriously, are considering these things, and they have weather plans and they're acting upon them.
Kudos
Yes.
to all of you for that.
Absolutely. And this raises actually an issue I've thought a lot about recently, related to weather, which was Steve Miller actually proactively canceling his entire summer tour due to the possibility of weather. Now, we're not, I'm not here to speculate at all whether or not this is what whether or not this is you know
If that was the only factor, but it was
the that
definitely
was
a
the only
factor.
factor or what have you, but I found it interesting that the reason for the cancellation given was the threat of severe weather. And to me, I look at that almost as a win in the sense that it's on everyone's radar now. Now, whether or not it's, you know, you're doing it for the safety of fans, or whether or not the expense that comes with a postponed or a canceled gig, the fact that the severe weather and its impact on live events is now, it's hit the mainstream, it's out there, it's become sort of an accepted part of what we do and is now being pointed to as a reason for being proactive in terms of you know, cancellation or postponement. I will be curious to see if this pops up again anywhere else as a rationale, and if it pops up enough to where people kind of start to cease to believe it and just tune it out, and then we start moving backwards in terms of people's level of seriousness at which they take severe weather at live events.
So we are in the US, especially on the East Coast, going into a week where the heat index, there are many different ways to measure weather, go back to that pod and listen to it again, but where the heat index is well over 100 for, again, a large portion of the East Coast. And this is a time of year with a lot of outdoor summer activities, outdoor concerts, outdoor summer camps. This is the time of year you start to hear about students collapsing at marching band camp or football camp or soccer camp. I just want to give a shout out to Dr. Kevin Claisel. Some of their groups got together and created a free app called Zelus, Zelus, and it's a wet bulb globe temperature monitor. So if you learn about that and how that might help you, if you don't have access to that information, that one is free. Again, it's in response to these activities that are, you're doing it outside, and it's really important you know what the heat impact is on the body and the fact that it's cumulative. So when they're all the meteorologists right now are freaking out because it's not that you have one day that's 100, you have 5 days where the heat index is over 100, and that heat load builds up in your body over those days and can be devastating over time. So that is something that, all of us, as we do events and manage people, be they our employees or performers or guests, it's really important to recognize that risk and take good care of everybody.
And we have quite a bit more to talk about heat, but I would like to point out, and John, you can certainly correct me, but I believe in the UK, where you happen to be at the moment, y'all have had pretty serious heat for the last few weeks, maybe.
Yeah, it's
Or did
been
you?
July, so the school holidays have started, so obviously the weather has now become cloudy and wet, at least where I am in the country. But yeah, throughout July was reasonably hot over here, for which catches people out because generally we're not used to it.
Right.
Our buildings aren't well air conditioned in a lot of places and so on, so it does definitely have an impact on the UK. And obviously then the other thing is you'll then just get the torrential downpour, which, whilst people go, I don't mind standing in the rain, just trying to get things like ambulances around site, people on and off site, crews working in the wet, people becoming, as temperature drops at night, cold and wet.
Right.
It's not just a discomfort thing. I know, Bonnaroo was their last day, fell victim to just intense flooding, didn't it? So
Yeah,
it's
they canceled it.
just yeah, it's not just heat, it's rain, and can have a wide impact. I think one of the other things that we talk about, we started off talking about communication. Audiences are a lot more open to the idea that there's less shock now when an event says it's cancelling due to weather. There'll be disappointment, but generally, if that messaging is handled well and the event explains what the weather conditions that were creating the risk are, audiences seem to be a lot more receptive nowadays to going along with that messaging
You know,
as it becomes more of a common thing.
there's one other thing. You mentioned the rain, and this is not exactly in our wheelhouse, but the flooding in Texas, the flash flooding in Texas that, among other things, went through those summer camps, resulting in the loss of a whole bunch of young children. We are frequently building events on places that flood because they design parks and things like that to be floodplains. And that's where you put on a show. And knowing what the possibilities are for your site design, I think it's just that brings home in a very devastating way how important it is to really understand where you're building your site and the ramifications of
Hazard
hazard
assessment,
assessment.
hazard assessments,
It was
and
just it was just an awful example. Sorry to.
no, it is, and it's I've felt miserable about this whole
Yeah,
everything
been a
affected
terrible
by
story.
that. And speaking of which, our own Kevin Claisel happens to be reasonably close to the area at which that happened. He was not in the not in the direct vicinity, but someone who obviously is very involved in meteorology, and to have it in your backyard, I know that it's there aren't many many words to say in that, other than that we need to use it as a reminder to be sure that we're doing everything we can to protect our people.
Yeah.
My right in thinking the US most cities produce flood maps.
Yes.
Somewhere in your city's GIS department archive, there will be something showing the likelihood of a flood in a over a time period. Is that pretty common?
Yes, but I would say that not every like it's everything is so dispersed that not every area is going to be like not every person putting on an event might not know to ask that question. And not every permitting process is the same. So the permit may not say, have you considered, again, wide and varying. But I think it will definitely, this particular thing hopefully will bring more attention to that as a possibility, because of how much coverage you got, which. It absolutely should get all that coverage. It was just, again, I don't know that absolutely every event thinks about it, because it, if it's a 1,000-year flood, and you are 35 years old, it doesn't occur to you that a 1,000-year flood might happen during your show.
Agreed. Well, and in many respects, we spend a lot of time saying focus on the most likely risks to
Right.
your event. And how up until recently, flood is kind of one of those ones along the line with alien invasion and what
Right.
happened, because you're thinking about this sort of very condensed time period. In which you're going to be on site and going, okay, we're looking at a 100-year flood. We're going to be here for 3 days, and we're not going to worry about it, and we're not going to have
That's
people here
not
when it
very
happens
likely,
anyway.
yeah.
So you don't consider those things.
It's
That it's
considered more operationally as well of, oh, the flood will be how are we going to get vehicles around, not is the site going to get washed away.
right.
You
Right.
think
Is
of it
it
more
they're
as
going to
a
be 20 feet of water where this was? Yeah, it's I would say the weather activity definitely gives us more things to think about. There were other weather events as well. We had during graduations in New Jersey, 100 people fell ill due to the heat, and they labeled it a mass casualty event. That's how serious that was. They declared a state of emergency and canceled all recreational activities in Patterson.
And there's been some movement, and there has been some movement within the last year or so. I'm going to jump off of this for a minute in terms of addressing heat hazards. Last year, and forgive me, I don't have the exact month, OSHA put forward a proposed heat standard that has been winding its way through the process. They just held public hearings on it last month at the beginning of June. I don't know where that's going to go at this moment. Getting new OSHA to, or any government organizations to put forth new standards right now, this is a tough standards writing time period. And there's been some rumblings out there that the directive is if you introduce new standards, 20 or so standards have to go, or 20 any new regulations, then 20 or so regulations need to go away. So it's very uncertain as to whether or not the heat standard that's being put forward is going to be enacted anytime soon. However, something I just read about this morning was a couple weeks ago. Alex Padilla, I believe his name, out of California, actually proposed. Okay, I wrote it down so I don't mess it up. Posed a new regulation, the Heat Illness Prevention Act of 2025, in Congress, which on my initial reading, follows a little bit along the line of what California has in place. So it would make sense, and is a little bit more prescriptive than what has been put forward in the OSHA standard. So they're kind of attacking heat on a two-prong front, will any of them go anywhere? I don't know. But I think what's important is we're having a conversation about the effects of heat on individuals and in the workplace. And you know, the more that we draw attention to it, you know, the more employers and just ourselves personally can pay attention to the signs of heat illness and take measures to prevent it.
Yeah, I will see if we can include our heat illness document in the show notes for this one. Regardless of how long it takes to get that through, or if it doesn't get through, or it is good to talk about. I always feel like I say this over and over again. We don't need guidance or a law to enact heat protections for our people.
Do the right thing. That is what
Just
we
do the
want.
right thing, with the best intentions. You don't need a law to tell you to do that. You have my permission. There you go. Danielle said that I could do the right thing for my people. I mean, it would be great if we had regulations that have affected a wide variety of employers.
I mean, I think it's useful in the sense of keeping the conversation at the forefront.
I
And then
agree.
there are, generally speaking, there are some people are great with the carrot, some people need the stick.
Correct. Well, here's a stick for you. If
Yes.
something happens to one of your people, your insurance company is going to be, boom, there are going to be consequences there. So there's your stick. If you have need of a stick, you still have one. We'll talk more about OSHA in a bit.
Because
Because there's a lot there this time.
there's a lot of OSHA.
but I want to talk about, I want to go back to Europe, and I want to talk
Who
about
am
crowds. No,
Oh, yeah, not in general. Okay.
also that, but no.
ESA road trip.
Yes, a road trip, absolutely. So there is an organist called Anna Lapwood, and if you guys have never heard of her, look her up. She's got a huge social media following, and when I she plays like big giant pipe organs, she is fantastic. She was on tour and went to the Cologne Cathedral, and she expected that, a few thousand people would come to this concert. It's a classical music concert. Well, she is very, very popular, and so many people showed up that she decided to do two shows so that everyone would have a chance. They had these huge crowds in the street. Well, their estimates were something like 13,000 people came in. She did two shows of 4,000 people, and still not everybody was able to attend. So they had, people in the street just listening. I cannot imagine if I was traffic control in that area, how in the world you're like, what is going on, right? Because it's not the sort of event that has the same sort of planning and infrastructure as a Beyonce concert, right? And she posted something to say, lesson learned, I'll make sure there's a ticketing system in place in the future. And that is a great reason to have ticketing at GA events that you don't have a good sense of how many people are coming, because if she'd had that, she would have realized she would have sold out very, very early, and could have perhaps managed it that way. Kudos to her for doing a second show sort of in the moment, and for recognizing that there's opportunity there to make her experience better for her fans. I just, we talk about a certain type of show pretty often, and this is an outlier that is the exact same situation. So I thought it was a cool crowd opportunity in a different genre of event.
You know, I'm only slightly familiar based on these conversations, aside from the fact like, wow, you play a pipe organ. I mean, I want to be a professional pipe organist. I think that'd be fantastic, but if I had any a modicum of talent anyway. But we're, you know, I think there are two, you know, there, this is an event related, there's a planned event. But I think another level of this story is social media awareness and organizers having a good sense of how that following group is going to behave. When I looked at this, I started, I was thinking about this, but I was also thinking about the pop-up events. They've, you know, other social media stars deciding to say, I'm gonna be here giving away games outside of store X. And
Right.
then thousands and thousands and thousands of people just sort of land on that, and everyone's caught off guard, going, wait, we weren't expecting this many people to come. To me, and I don't know if she organized her own show or if she was working with an entity to help organize the show, but if you are working with social media stars, and I didn't even do air quotes there because I'm learning that I am not,
Because that's a real thing. You can be a
this
social
isn't,
media
yeah.
star.
I'm trying to not be so much of a curmudgeon in my old age, but that understanding how the audience is likely to behave, and if you don't have a strong understanding, be sure you're consulting with people that do, because otherwise you could be let your guard down and it'll be caught flat-footed. I don't know. I don't know. I lost my metaphor there, but it would not be good. How about that?
Surprised. You'd be surprised,
Yeah,
taken aback.
there's also the element with kind of, again, social media stars and so on. It's not just the show itself. It's getting them in and getting them out, and the fans that want to hang around for autographs. And often they appear in places that aren't traditional music arenas or something where there is a service yard where the artist can get straight off stage and be in a car before the final note of the song has ended. And that kind of autograph hound bit, managing it in that way. Social media stars, by their very nature, move around in society a lot more. And to your point of pop-up giveaways and things like that, it can present a whole other challenge. In kind of the audiences they attract, who aren't necessarily there to see their show, but are there to see just the fact they're in the same place at the same time as them. It's a different attraction, isn't it?
So, John, staying on the other side of the pond, can you talk a little bit about the bungee ride story?
This
This
is
is not
one
a good
that
story.
it's not a good story, and it is it's almost one of those ones that if it was not to play down, if you read this headline out of context, you'd think this was an April Fool's Day, but just the headline. So, young person electrocuted at St George's Day fete in an area called Sussex, which is in the kind of southeast of the UK. One person was electrocuted and two others injured as a bungee ride was set up under an electricity pylon at a St George's Day event. So, I there's not there wasn't a whole lot of follow-up news about this, and I haven't seen a report, and I wasn't spoken to anybody who was there, but my understanding is it's a bungee cord sort of ride where you get flung up into the air, but it was set up under or in close proximity to power lines, and the
Okay.
ride itself obviously then made contact or there's arcing between the ride and the power lines, resulting in the electrocution injuries there. The police said, the man in his 20s suffered an electric shock and was taken to hospital as a precaution. So thankfully, it doesn't sound like there was any fatalities or, as a precaution, serious injuries there. But it kind of speaks to the idea of, you can have all the rules and regulations, but you still need to look up in the air sometimes and look down at the ground, and
Yes.
site surveys and site plans and hazard maps and so on are still an important feature of site planning.
Yeah, it's another site planning. Don't forget
Look
to look up.
a 2D site plan, and
Right,
then
it is,
you
you're missing a whole thing.
build it in 3D. People exist.
So I'm gonna pivot off that because I think this next set of things is the same. So as Jacob, do you want to talk about what happened with at Katy Perry's concert?
To my understanding, and it's both Katy Perry and Beyonce had had similar circumstances, but they were on a flying structure over the audience during one of their performances, and there was a bit of a structural failure mishap. I don't know the full details of what occurred, but in looking at the videos, they sort of went off track and turned at about a 45 degree angle, and could have potentially dumped both Katy Perry and Beyonce, two separate shows, down onto the audience. Thankfully, that
Unbelievable.
did not happen. And honestly, both acts seem to behave like they responded well to it. There wasn't a lot of freak out. I don't think it really aside from the initial shock, it didn't create any sort of larger panic within the audience there, likely because this had been rehearsed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, and safety measures were put in place. But it having two of them happen so quickly is now, I think, potentially puts this on the radar of the media and the audience to keep an eye out for these sorts of things happening again when, you know, they have an artist flying overhead.
Artist flying is always extremely fraught.
Remember a Pink show in Hyde Park a number of years ago where there was a failure in a bit of her equipment or equipment was used on that show, and she got sort of dragged across the stage. Thankfully, I don't think she was in the air when it failed, but it pulled her sideways across the stage. And Jacob, you made a point there about, you know, the rehearsals and so on. And actually, although there was problems on these, they are probably more in the, in terms of injuries, the near miss category of actually there was no injuries.
There
The
was no injury.
kind of the show was paused, the artist was recovered successfully. There wasn't a great bang and everything fell out the roof. It shows that even if things are built, probably even when things go a bit awry, it's not a part of the plan, but it's the
It's
safer
planned
part of
for.
what happened. Yes.
100%. And I think that was it, and forgive me if I'm starting to mix the two incidents together, but if I recall, they Beyonce at that point, they just sort of they were lowered it down, she got off and continued on. And so a plan was in place for something like this.
Yeah, in some ways, they're both a near miss and a success in that sense. And also, it again, just from observations and from chatter on AV rigging disasters, it's almost more malfunction than failure. And it did appear that they were both clipped into some sort of safety device as well. So they weren't, you know, let's say the butterfly went completely sideways. Probably very uncomfortable, but not plummeting down. Anyway, so just something to notice. There was also, John, I think you are the one that noted this. There was a in the gray space, or actually off-site entirely. Was it Beyonce's concert in the subway station? I can't remember who figured this one
Yeah,
out,
so
but
it was Beyonce in Atlanta, I
in
believe,
Atlanta.
and
So
it
as the
was
crowds were
that
leaving.
Ronettes gray space. It might, I think, it might have not even. It just was in the fact that Beyonce was into it. It was just happened to be the Beyonce audience. It was not
Yeah,
even
it was their crowd. It
the
wasn't anything to do with their show, other than it was their crowd in motion, and an escalator brake failed. And what that means is an escalator starts to cycle through very, very quickly. So you had a whole bunch of people being spat off of the bottom of an escalator into a very crowded area. So I didn't see any. This has been fairly widely reported. There didn't seem to be any serious life-changing industry in injuries, but it's just just another thing to note. You always need to know where your crowd is going and make sure that
One of the
choose.
things that I actually, and forgive me if I take us on a tangent, but it's something I need to do. This was actually, in my estimation, an appropriate use of the term stampede, in the sense that it wasn't a lot of people use crowd crush. They use the crowd crush and stampede and all that interchangeably. You look at the video, that is what happened. People were coming, the escalator malfunctioned. They were coming down, and then everyone else in that area started running away
Right,
from that particular area.
because they had to.
To me, whether it was intentional or otherwise, I was kind of heartened to see that the terminology was used correctly. And you know, as a little bit of a nudge, nudge, wink, wink, our sister organization, the Global Crowd Management Alliance, has recently dropped a document called Words Matter that is available as a free download at thegcma.com. And it relates to this. It was a tool that we put together as to help guide organizers, the media, public safety authorities with proper terminology for specific circumstances. It's been very well received It actually has been used and referenced a few times in the media, which gives me all sorts of glee. The same glee that I always get every time I see ESA mentioned. I get that nice little happy feeling like we're making a difference, people. But that happens to be out there, and it's a living document and will continue to be updated. So if you want to know the proper terminology for proper circumstances, please visit thegcma.com and download the Words Matter document. Okay, I'm off the soapbox.
Oh no, I'm just gonna I'm gonna yes and you. So we'll move into that. There've been this part of the year we've also released some new standards. So we have new guidance out in the world, which is very exciting. And these are also a free download, the communication standard and the parade standard. Both were published recently. So that brings us up to
A lot.
a lot. Like enough that as it used to be is like we have three published and now I'm like
Danielle, it's Friday. I'm not mathing.
all
Okay.
right y'all look
We're
it
into
up
double figures, right?
we're
Well
into
into double
double
figures.
I believe so and that's really exciting all these things are written because we saw a need not to get too much into the politics of the moment but if unless you've been really not paying any attention, the federal government is changing a lot of how it thinks about things like OSHA. There have been a lot of layoffs, in lots of things with OSHA, including things like NIOSH. NIOSH falls under HHS. Sorry if you are an international listener and just all alphabet soup. NIOSH is National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and they do a bunch of the research as to why this particular thing is safe and why this other one isn't. They set the limits for how much noise you're supposed to be exposed to. They give us a lot of the data points. Also OSHA enforcement and all of the basically there have been cutbacks at a lot of these organizations. There's also discussion, and then this is what I find very, very interesting. Right now, OSHA is proposing a newer interpretation of the general duty clause. Now, if you guys remember, the general duty clause is what? Either you want to just run through it.
Employers have a duty to
Two.
provide, I don't have the exact terminology, provide as a safe workplace free of recognized hazards.
Well done.
Okay, thank you. I knew it was there somewhere.
So the new interpretation would, again, this is proposed, would limit enforcement in situations where hazards are inherent to professional performance-based activities. And so this would be places where hazards are inseparable from the core nature of the occupation. So the things they identify in this category are things like professional sports, live entertainment, and high-risk recreation. I find this fascinating in two different ways. Partly, it seems like a great excuse to be irresponsible. If you're like, well, OSHA says I don't have to do it anymore. See previous statement about how I feel about things like that. It does not impose new costs on employers, so that's an exciting pro. And it reduces unnecessary regulations in theory. These are the pros. Ask the internet. So the other thing I can think of is there is a friction between OSHA's regulations as it pertains to things like sports and entertainment, in that they're written with a different job in mind. So if you are a trapeze artist and OSHA says that you have to have a secondary fall arrest over 4 feet up, that is not possible. In fact, this is a hearsay. I was told by a told by. But a person doing a high jump, so climbing a very, very tall ladder and then jumping down into a pool, they wanted that person to have fall arrest while they were climbing the ladder. And the problem is that if you're wearing something like that, the impact of the harness when you land could cause a life-changing injury. So you're provided an additional hazard by your safety equipment. Now, are there other ways to solve it? I'm sure there are. But that was the strict interpretation of regulation gave you a new hazard. So I recognize, one of the reasons we're always looking for OSHA entertainment trainers is because we want somebody to help us put this guidance into our circumstance. Like, how does that rule that was written for the construction injury,
There you
how?
go. Industry.
Oh.
There we go. Injury, industry, tomato, tomato.
This rule that was written for the construction industry, how does that apply? How do I apply that so that I am, not just honoring the letter of the law, but the intent of it? So I find this very, very interesting. I also worry that it would be abused. And I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts on it.
I had this one had, popped up on my radar and then had sort of fallen away until you had mentioned it earlier here. My initial thought is that's reasonable. There are certain, under the current definition, there are certain things that it is just not possible or does introduce a new hazard. If you want to use the current definition of the general duty clause, I also do see a tremendous opportunity for abuse in the event that someone decides to introduce, they receive a citation and then they come back and say, well, no, we're in an entertainment space and these are actually performers and these hazards are unavoidable, et cetera, et cetera. Like, how broad does perform is performer ultimately going to start scooping things up as a mechanism of contesting a citation? And that because you might be dealing with entities on the other side with OSHA or whatnot that don't have a proper understanding of our industry and the things may say, yeah, absolutely. That falls under that category. They're performers, but they don't actually happen to be performers as we traditionally think of them. I like to think that folks aren't gonna, aren't going to push those boundaries, but we shall see. Pausing.
And I wonder, could you argue that it's not just the performers, but the staff around them? It doesn't say performer, it says live entertainment. If this is something that interests you, gentle listener, there's the public comments on the proposal are being accepted through September 2nd, 2025. And you can look at it more and make your own decisions and deductions based on what you find. And I want, if you guys want to get in touch, podcast@eventsafetyalliance.org. Follow us on social media. We'd love to interact with you there. And y'all, it is time to register for the Event Safety Summit, the best time of the year in Charlotte, North Carolina, in November. Be there, be square. No, I meant to say it that way. All right. So let's finish with another win that could be interpreted differently, but I absolutely think this is a win. In San Antonio, Texas, Shakira's concert was called off and it was postponed, they said, due to structural issues. Now, I have very, very intense feelings as to why this is a huge win. Do either of you want to share why you think it's a huge win?
It comes down to the fact of whatever the structural issue was, and in the news article we got, it doesn't, we don't have engineering reports or anything, obviously, but somebody identified there was a concern. They had a concern that something wasn't structurally safe, even though it was, and I think in the news report it says about 40 minutes before the show. So, they've got right up to the point of doors and they had this concern and they communicated that concern and action was taken on it, and it wasn't brushed under the carpet, and there wasn't, the sound check went fine, so it must be fine. If somebody had a concern, they spoke up, it was looked at, and the
And they
decision was made
called it.
not to go ahead with the show,
Yeah, that's amazing.
which
That's
speaks to our
amazing.
point. Communication with the audience, communication between teams, trust between teams. So whatever that issue was, someone had a concern and felt brave or that they had the right to speak up and say, I don't feel good about this. And it was taken seriously.
Yeah, kudos to them. That had to be a devastating decision to call that, especially at that time. So, and the number of people that ended up having that just had to have agreed with that concern is just, it was a very hopeful news story for me, as incredibly disappointing and expensive as I'm sure it was. So,
100%.
thank you guys so much for joining me today. We have this sort of round robin about where in the world are we? I would say there's tons and tons of events going on, and the fact that things happen when they happen, that's not unexpected. And I hope we all continue to do the very best we can to turn our lemons into lemonade and to keep people safe at events. So thank you again so much for joining us today, and stay safe out there.
Bye, y'all.